Are we at 29?
We're on 29A. I think the link that I just sent you actually has
29A.
Yeah, here it is.
6, Gamora, right?
Correct. That link that I just sent, ignore. This is the right one, 29A, paragraph number 6 on Safaria, I believe. Yeah, 29. Here, yeah, paragraph 6, 29A, paragraph 6. Okay, so in the Gemara. So Amar Rava. So we just had this line. So we went through the whole Mishnah. It was everything that was set up on the Mizbeach, on the altar, et cetera. So Amar Rava Guzma. So Rava says that that's an exaggeration. What's the exaggeration? The exaggeration is the, if you look at the Mefarish on the side here, the fact that it held 300 kor, that's just like an extreme exaggeration. The Mefarisher says, it never got 300. Because the Mizbeach itself, the area that it was, could not hold that much. So they say that it was 300 is an exaggeration. It's not actually what it was. And then another statement, there's another statement in the Mishnah later on that says they gave the korban tamid, the animal, before it was to be slaughtered, they would give it a cup of water from a golden cup. Amarava Guzma, that was also an exaggeration. They wouldn't actually give it from an actual golden cup. The Mefarisher points out that this is a mission in the future. They would make sure that it was fully hydrated so that it'd be easier to flay its skin off. They would give it from a golden cup. So Rava here is saying that's an exaggeration. It wasn't actually a golden cup. That would be crazy to give an animal to drink from a golden cup. They just give them like a plastic cup. I don't know, a Dixie cup, but they wouldn't use a golden cup. Amar Rabbi Ami, Dibra Torah Lashon Havai, Dibra Nevim Lashon Havai, Dibra Chachamim Lashon Havai. So Rabbi Abba says the Torah sometimes talks using extreme exaggerations. The prophets use extreme exaggerations. The rabbis use these exaggerations. Right? So he's saying, look, everyone uses some exaggeration. You can't start like pointing things and say, oh, specifically the Torah is always precise. Exactly. It doesn't make exaggerations. So Rabbi Ami is saying, no, sometimes it speaks in Lashon Havai. For instance, Arim Gdolot V'Tzurot B'Shamayim is the pasuk from Sefer Devarim, and B'Shamayim Zal Gadot, so it refers to these cities that are so big and they're in the heavens. So they're actually in the heavens? No, Lashon Havai. No, it's just like an extreme exaggeration. It's almost like a form of rhetorical speech, right? To say something is so big, it's like in the sky. It's not actually situated in the heavens, but I mean, it's like that. You already know when you were to read the pasuk, you'd already know that it's not literally in the heavens. That's the idea. It's saying sometimes the Torah just speaks with this like more extremely maybe poetic type of language, but it's not literal. So that's that example. Dibru chachamim l'shon havai. The sages also call it that. Hada amran tapuach vishguat tamid because shel zahav. For example, the case that we have about the 300 core sized heap of ash that wasn't literally okay. It was a lot. There's a lot there. So that's Lashon Havai. It's like an example, exaggeration. Also, the fact that they would feed this animal from a golden cup, that's also not literal. That's more like figurative sort of exaggeration type of thing. That's the how the sages spoke with such language. Dibru Nevim Lashon Havai Dichtiv. V'chol Am Ha'aretz B'chalalin B'chalilin V'tibaka Aretz L'kolam. Someone from Malachim Aleph, that the whole, everyone that was singing and singing so loudly that the ground like split out of the noise, right? So their voice. So it wasn't actually that loud that it actually split like that, but okay, it was just sort of speaking in extremes. You get the idea that it was extremely loud if things were breaking, but that wasn't literally happening. Amar Rabbi, Yanai Bar Nachmani, Amar Shmuel, B'shlosha Mekomot Dibru Chachamim B'lashon Havai. So Rabbi Yanai Bar Nachmani quotes Shmuel, who says there were three places that the rabbis spoke B'lashon Havai. Beluhen, Tapuach, Geffen, Ufarochet. So he's presumably here, he's disagreeing, right? And we're going to see this more in a minute. But so he says there are three times the rabbis spoke in exaggerations. One was the Tapuach that we saw before.
They only said it three times.
That's what he's saying here. He's saying everything else you can understand literally. Here, though, it's these three that are not. Beluhen, Tapuach.
The other one was saying that there are lots of places.
Correct. At least we have one other place that wasn't mentioned here, and that was drinking the offering the animal the water from a golden cup. That was as an example of the rabbi speaking in extremes. But here he's saying there are only three times, and that one wasn't one of those three. But so I guess we don't know exactly how many times, if Rabbi Ami was saying, you know, only once, or whether he says like repeatedly throughout things. That's subject probably to more discussion. But okay, so where were we? Tapuach kevenu faroche laapuke mitarava. And so these three things, the apple or that mound on the altar, gefen, we're going to see what all these are. Gefen is a vine, these grapes, and faro paroche, and the curtain. So we're going to, and that goes to exclude this case that Rava had said, which was the offering the animal from a golden cup. Okay, ditznat. Hishkut atamid bekos shel zahav, emar Rava guzma, kamash malan, hani in hatamlo. So this is Rava's statement that when they would give the korban the cup, the animal from, they would give him water, they give him to drink from this golden cup. Rava said that was an exaggeration. And so here we see that these three, according to Rabbi Yanai Bar Nachmani, these three, the mound of ash, this vine and the curtain, those are exaggerations, but anything else is not, including Rava's statement. So why would it be? So why would they give? So when, what purpose is there? Why would you give this animal that's about to be slaughtered? Why would you give it to drink from a golden goblet? Like what? Why do that? So the Gemara answers, explains, ein aniyut b'mkom ashirut. There should be no poverty in the place of wealth. Meaning the Beit HaMikdash is such a significant, wealthy, like beautiful, magnificent structure, magnificent place. Nothing should be so low. Everything, even the cup that they're going to feed the animal to drink from, that's going to be golden. Everything is gold because we're in the Beit HaMikdash, a place of wealth. We don't start just like, you know, you don't have like you're in the golden cups. Everyone, even the animals, going to drink from golden cups. It would not be appropriate in the Beit HaMikdash to then have the animal drink from a Dixie cup. You could do better than that, golden cup. Okay.
Does that mean that the tools used to wash the hands and feet were also gold?
Yeah, oh yeah, you got everything's precious metals and everything. Yeah. Yeah, the kior for sure. Yeah, the kior, yeah. This is last week's parsha, right? The kior or kitisa 2 weeks ago. Yeah, okay. Okay, so tapuach ad amran. So we what the exact now going through those three exaggerations. So tapuach ad amran, the mound of ash. We already talked about that example. What that's talking about. Gefen, this wine, the vine thing. Ditanya gefen zahavaita omedet al petach haichal. So apparently there was a golden vine that was hanging on the door of the heichal. Umudla al gabe kolon nasot, and it was sort of like hanging over these rods. B'chol misha mit nadev ale. And people, as part of their donations to the Beit HaMikdash, they would bring golden grapes, golden clusters, golden vines, whatever, and they would attach it, they would hang that on, they would put that on this golden thing that was hanging there. Amar Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Tzadok, Masa hayav nimnu alei shlosh mil kohanim lefanota. It once happened that, so Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Tzadok says, they once had to move it, and it took 300 kohanim for them to move it. So that is an exaggeration. There, the Mefarish here says on the side, Guzmahi, that's an exaggeration. If it was really that big that it required 300, it probably would have broken on its own. There's no way it could have been that big. Okay, so that's exaggeration number two. Farochet, exaggeration number three. Titznan Rabbi Shimon Begamli Elmer Mishim Rabbi Shimon Haskan Parochet Avya Tefach. So there was this curtain, or the curtain in the Beit HaMikdash was, its thickness was a tefach, was a hand breadth. Al shivim u'shinaim nimim ne'ereget. So there were like 72 strings, parts that were sewn, that weaved together. Val kol nima v'nima esrim v'arba chutin. And really each one of those strands that was of those 72 was itself composed of another 42 different strings. Orka arba imama, rochba esrim imama. So its height was 40 amot, its length across was 20 amot. So it filled up the entire, like that entire entranceway, that would be hanging there. It filled up the whole thing.
It's about 60 feet, right?
Okay, so that's pretty big. Okay, so the Gemara then continues. It was made from like 82,000, maybe that was its worth, its value. Gold is very significant, very expensive. They would make two every year. When if they ever had to immerse it, the Mefarish here on the side says that before they would use it, they would immerse it in the mikvah, because in case it became impure at some point, they'd have to immerse it in a mikvah. So it was enormous. And number four just got here. Okay. So this was an enormous, enormous curtain. And it says that it took 300 kohanim in order to really immerse it in the mikvah. So that would be exaggeration number three, that it wasn't actually 300. There's no way it was that big that required 300 people, 300 kohanim to actually immerse it. Okay, so those are the three exaggerations that are reported here. So Josh, if you're there, we're now on maybe 10 lines down on Chav Tet Amud Bet 29b.
Thanks.
I can post the link again, but this link is going to go back to the other page.
I'm there. Thank you.
Got it. Okay. So Hechelu Ma'alin Bigzirin L'Seder Tamar Racha. So it would the Mishnah then, we're going back to the Mishnah, the Mishnah had said that they would, you know, set up these logs of wood in order to burn. And they would use any of them except Chutz Mishel Zayin Mishel Geffen. They wouldn't use olive branches and they would not use vines. Honey, my Thomas. So what's the reason? Rav Papa Amar Mishim De Katri. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov Amar Mishim Yishuv De Eretz Yisrael. So the first answer, Rav Papa, he says, the reason they wouldn't use these is because there's knots in them. And the Mefarish here on the side points out, where is it here? He says, Yeshmem Ksharim, Vishvil Ksharim, Ain Sorfin Yafed. Because there, the wood is very knotty, so it doesn't burn very well, and it's very smoky. So they would want to avoid using these things because they're very knotty, it causes smoke. That's not the ideal right now, so that's why they wouldn't do it. That's Rav Papa. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov says, presumably, an additional reason. And he says, not just because of that, but also because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And the Mefarish here says, a couple lines in, it says, B'chol, I don't know where he says, if you were to burn all the olive branches and all the vines, then you wouldn't have any wine anymore. You wouldn't have any oil anymore. So people aren't going to be able to live there. You're going to be using up everything that they have. The land of Israel would go barren because these are significant things. The land of Israel is praised for its wine and for its olives. Olive oil, so now you burn all the thing, they're not going to have it anymore. So you've got to, you can't, that's why they didn't use them. Okay. So the Gemara here is presumably giving us, it's challenging this idea of Eretz Yisrael, that you don't, we want to do it for the sake of the land of Israel, because we see that, The pasuk in Vayikra, Perek Aleph, tells us that they put the wood on the altar, and there would be the wood that would totally become completely burnt. And those woods were Mainihu Dokre Shipu. There were these sticks of wood, Delo Katri, that didn't have any these knots in them. Basli Mikdar Mitocho, and they would like totally burn up completely. So we see that like the idea of these having the knots is a real fundamental thing. It's, you don't, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, it can't be because of that, because we have this statement from a previous generation who says the real issue here has to do with the quality of the wood, as opposed to whether it's what type of fruit that it grows. The Gemara continues, V'chi chol ha'itzim k'sherim l'maracha, hen kol ha'itzim k'sherim chut mizayin v'gefen, aval ba'elo ha'yirgilim v'riyot shel te'ena v'shel egos v'shel etz shemen. So we have this statement that every tree was technically good, but they would typically use the te'en fig and egos and etz shemen. These were the ones they would typically normally use. That was also in our Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer adds, af shel mayish, v'shel alon, v'shel dekel, v'shel charu, v'shel shikma. He adds additional other trees wood that they would often use. So the Gemara is going to analyze this. Bishlam alaman darim mishim dekatri. So if you're going to say that the whole issue, the reason that you use this wood over that wood, it has to do with whether it's knotty or not. So if that's the issue, Bishlama, the Mandam Rishim Tikatri, Bahakumiflugi. So now I can understand what this debate is between the first opinion that we just quoted and the Rabbi Eliezer who added more. Why? Demar Savar, Apalgav de lo Katri Migavai, Kevan Tikatri Mibara, Mibarai, lo Maitinan. Umar Savar, Kevan de lo Katri Migavai, Apalgav Mibarai, Katri Maitinan. So the whole question is about whether the knottiness of it. The one opinion is going to say, look, they're, even though they're knotty, they're knotty on the outside, but they're not knotty on the inside. So whatever that means, it's totally fine because, okay, they look bad, but they're still going to burn really nicely. So that's why there's a more expansive list. And the earlier source is going to say, no, since it's gnatty on the outside, even though it might burn well, but it's still, they're gnatty on the outside. It doesn't look good, so we're not going to burn it. So that means this machloket is totally understandable if all we're focusing on is the naughtiness of the wood, the quality of the wood. That has to do with which wood has what quality. But if you're going to say the whole concern has to do with, you don't want to, you know, lay barren the land of Israel. So the Gemara asks, "Dekel mi leitbei mishum yishuv eretz Yisrael." So then, why would anyone like Rabbi Eliezer include dekel, right? These palms, like why would it include that? That's also a really important fruit that provides something for Eretz Yisrael. So why would you include that if the whole concern is that you're going to eradicate all the stuff in Eretz Yisrael? Amar lach litamech to ina leitba mishum yishuv eretz Yisrael elamai eat lach lememar. The Gemara says that couldn't be it. It's not that the dekel tree. What we're talking about is a dekel tree that doesn't have any fruit. How do I know? Because everyone agrees that they would use a fig tree. Figs are also significant. Figs are also important. Figs are also fruit that the land of Israel is praised for. So if you're going to include figs, that must be because they don't have any. That you're talking about fig trees that don't have any fruit. So dekel also is without fruit. So there you see, we're not talking about burning trees that actually have. That actually produce fruit. The Gemara asks, "Mi ika teina dela avda peras?" What are you telling me that you? So okay, a dekel tree that doesn't have any fruit. I guess we have that, but a fig tree that doesn't have any figs. What do you mean? Every fig tree has figs. The Gemara says, "No, in kidrachava demar rachava." So no, we actually have, like Rachava says, "Haite teine chivarta v'shayfi lehu bechevla ditzavta disricha le bizra v'kar yehecha demasik yamasirton." Kora avda perilo avda. So the Rachava tells this whole story about if you take these fig trees, the white figs, and you plant them, and you rub them with this with rope of some sort that it peels off the bark as it's fully exposed. And if you would plant it, near the sea, so it gets the water rushes over it. It gets this. If it have you do all this thing, you end up with extremely strong wood. Kora avda. You make these posts of wood that are really strong. Perilo avda, but it's not going to produce any fruit. So here you have a fig tree that is exceptionally good quality wood, but it doesn't produce any fruit. So there's an example of a fig tree, how you can get a fig tree that's grown and cultivated specifically for the wood, but not doesn't produce any fruit. So that would be the example that we're talking that you would use would be a fig tree like this that doesn't produce any fruit, but it's still very good. And just to pose a point here about how strong, how heavy it was, that if you had three of these trees, you'd have like a bridge, it wouldn't be able to tolerate it. It would just be crushed. It would fall down because these trees were so big and so strong and so heavy, you couldn't, you really couldn't do anything. You couldn't travel over a bridge with it. It would collapse. Finishing up the Mishnah, Sider Etamar Chagdola. So it talks about how they would make the whole pile of the wood for the biggest bonfire that was going to be on there. And it said that it had an entrance, the opening of it would be on the eastern side, I think we said, right? So the Gemara asks, my Thomas, so what was the reason you'd have like an opening, an entrance to it on the eastern side? Rav Huna, Rav Chista, so Rav Huna, Rav Chista disagree. Chadamar kadesha tehe aruach mina shevet ba. So one of them says, the reason is you'd have a sort of opening on the east so that when the wind would come, it would help feed the fire and you'd get the wind coming in to help burn it. Chadamar kadesha yu matzitina ta'alita misham. And the other opinion says, no, they would leave the entranceway because that was where they would walk in to sort of light the small little kindling. They would enter on the eastern side, and that's where that would be. So the question on that last opinion said that they would light it from that entrance. Gemara says, what do you mean? We said already that there would be, the logs of wood wouldn't be next to each other. There'd be gaps between them because they would light the kindling between the gaps and the rows of wood. So what are you telling me that there would be a whole opening on the eastern side to light kindling? You had kindling lit between every row. So how could you say what Rabbi Chaya ben Gzirim shayu metzitina ta'ali tamisham amar lach mekamot avdi? No, the Gemara answers no. Clearly, they had several different gaps and openings. They would light several different small fires. They'd light fires on the eastern side, and then between all the different rows, they'd light kindling. So you really have to. You want to get like a big pyre. You want to get a big bonfire going. You're going to have to light several different fires. So that's what it would be. There would be one entrance on the eastern side they'd light, but they'd also light several other ones between all the rows. And so you'd end up building a huge fire. And that's what they would do, is burning the fire in order to get the get that big bonfire going that's going to be mostly used for the sacrifices. And that brings us, Hajar Alach Ra'uhu Achav, this brings us to the end of the second chapter of Masechet Tamid. We'll stop here on Lamed Amud Aleph, and we'll continue and even finish the third chapter to not tomorrow. Oh, tomorrow? No, not tomorrow. I think on Thursday. We'll finish it at 9 p.m. on Thursday.